Blog Talk Radio.
Two things are true about students in urban American public schools. There are some students who do well and go on in life to become productive citizens, while there is a secondary population of students who go on to live lives that aren't so socially acceptable. While this secondary population of students, some 18% in Nashville, Davidson County, exhibit a number of behavioral issues and face extradition, it's no wonder why those students struggle to succeed academically. If they can't follow the simple rules of order, how are they expected to be focused enough to learn? I'm Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and I have recognized the needs of this population continually being unmet despite the best efforts of many dedicated educators over the years. As a result, my experience as a former special education teacher, youth counselor, and candidate for local and state offices, I've developed a school model to help address this troubled population. Dockery Christian Academy is a private, non-denominational Christian school whose primary focus is engaging parents as partners with educators and teachers in order to develop pro-social character for student learners. I'd love to share more information with you about this innovative education model. So please connect with me at www.dockeryacademy.org. That's D-O-C-K-E-R-Y, academy.org. Connect with us on Facebook at Dockery Christian Academy, or use the hashtag at 2020DCA. Thank you. I look forward to engaging you. Together we can make a difference for all of our children.
You're much more than the struggles that you go through. You're not defined by your pain, so let it go. You're not a victim.
In all things, give thanks. While 2020 has been tumultuous for all of us, really, there's a reason to remain thankful and optimistic before the Almighty. Talk Straight is particularly, on behalf of Pastor Ricky Wall and myself, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, the host of Talk Straight here, which you're listening to, we are particularly grateful to our listening audience for their continuous support. And tonight we have an open mic format, so let's express our thanks. The microphone is open to you. Don't have a monologue for you tonight or specific structure. I realize that most people are probably with their families. My wife told me, I'm going to give you 1 hour. Because if you were like normal people, you'd be with your family. but you're an extended family of mine. So what we're going to do is we're just going to open up the phone lines for a little while. If you can join us here for a second, just shout out this. Wish us a happy Thanksgiving. Say hello. And you don't have to stay the whole time. Just we're going to be on here 1 hour. 1 hour. 1 hour. Maybe less. But the number to call is 657-383-0944. Again, that number to call us in the studio is 657-383-0944. If you're on Facebook, perchance, and you're following us, you just want to sit, wave your hand, say hello, send an emoji or something, you could do that too in the group thread there. Just post your question, comment. I'll be happy to respond. And if anyone else is to join us here, then we'll engage that way. Well, we're just leaving the phone, the show open just for this abbreviated show. Here late, we've been doing 2 hours, but we're just going to do an hour, maybe a little less. If you have something you want to be thankful for, So I'll just begin. I'm thankful for the fact that despite any frustrations or disappointments that we may face, we're still here talking about them. And as long as we're alive, we have an opportunity to overcome whatever setbacks we've had. Yeah, they're disappointing. You know, heart may be broken. There are people, if you're like me, this year we lost loved ones and was not able to be with them because of different restrictions and things of that nature. That's rough. But, you know, we're still here, and we can continue on, remember them, and look toward a brighter future. So I'm grateful that we're all citizens of the United States of America, regardless to our political affiliations or none. What binds us together is that we're citizens, we're residents, brothers and sisters of the United States of America. And hopefully, my hope is that we'll come to that realization and we'll be able to see one another in that light, despite what happens here. So, again, this is a special Thanksgiving episode, so feel free to join us here via Facebook or call us in the studio, 657-383-0944, 657-383-0944. You know, we're grateful for a great many things, for new opportunities. As I shared with you Tuesday night and previously, recognize that this year is about gone now. They're about 36 days, and we'll be in another yearly cycle. We can't bring back yesterday, cannot reset 2020. But, beloved, we have an opportunity to think wise, to trust God, and look toward 2021 and making it the very best we can. Some of us, our businesses were interrupted. I'm one of those. But yet we maintain. We don't give up. You know, the beauty of the American dream is that you can do whatever you want to here, and you can make it. So despite the disappointments, as I say, and we realize that we need to recognize the need to embrace health realities and things of that nature, but we still move on. We have to press forward. Got a caller here from out of New Orleans. New Orleans, you are the first caller here in our abbreviated show where we're just giving thanks tonight, New Orleans, for what we have been blessed with. Welcome to the talk show.
Oh, yeah, I just happened to check to see what programs they got. I'm thankful for my family. My son called me up from New York and my daughter from Atlanta. And my other daughter called me, and I cooked for my father and brought food to his house. And so we all, you know, everybody stayed away from each other. That's what we did. I told my daddy, my dad is 93, and I told him, I said, Daddy, you're not going nowhere. He said, okay, son. And my son called me up from New York and said, Daddy, you're not going nowhere. And I said, okay, son.
You know, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. It, you know, and I appreciate hearing that the family is looking out for one. My daughter's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we talked a little earlier, and she's doing very similar. She's doing very similar, staying put and staying where she is and that sort of thing. So I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that. I sure can.
Yeah. People have to be patient. We'll get over this, but people just have to be patient, and there's no need of rushing into anything to cause more harm. And so people, you know, sometimes these things happen so we can sit back and relax and reflect and learn, you know. But okay, some people want to rush this the way they want to, and it just prolongs the situation.
I hope I made that clear that I can see both sides of that, that it is important that we're not being too big of a hurry. And, you know, New Orleans, some people feel as though 2020 was just a loss. You know what I mean? A total loss. And can you appreciate, though, the frustration and anxiety at the thought that we lost a whole year, pretty much? Can you appreciate that at least?
Well, I can tell you, after having lived through Hurricane Katrina, many of us from this area who lived through that have a whole different view of life as a result of that. You see, we don't, for example, after Hurricane Katrina, I don't try to value material stuff as much, you see, because you could lose it, you see. And, you know, and then people had to rebuild their homes, we had to do all of this stuff like that. So if it happens again, we may be gone out of here for good. So what I'm saying is, after living through Hurricane Katrina, it kind of prepares some of us for this situation we're in. Because you never think that you will see something like, let's say, Hurricane Katrina. You never thought you would see something like that or live through that. But after having lived through that, and then the pandemic comes, you just say to yourself, oh, well, we've been through something like this almost before. So, you know, you develop a type of discipline and patience.
Good point. I have family there, a brother and his wife and a few other people. And I was calling them when they had the last, the hurricane that hit there, the last one, before the Greek one. And I was calling, you know, ahead, y'all all right, man, we're fine. And we realized that these things come and we're going to hold fast. So I said, okay, very similar to your perspective. You kind of learn, to abide in the base. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But we cooked, I cooked, and then I had our family who wanted to come over and get a plate, because my mother taught my brothers and sisters taught us all how to cook well. We all good Creole cooks, and so, like I said, I need a big old pot of gumbo and stuff like that, and so people who want to come by can come, and then they just go and get a plate that's fixed. I'm about finished now making plates for family members. But that's pretty much how we did that. And then if you wanted to go by another relative house and get some stuff they made that I didn't make, that's how that worked then.
Yeah, but you just kept it, you know, made sure that you had a healthy distance. I have an aunt that is, 89 this year. And they did a Zoom thing. It was just her, you know, her children, my cousin. And they did a Zoom thing. Mm-hmm. That's how everybody. And it was unusual, very unusual, but you know what she told all of us? I ain't going to open the door. I ain't going to let you in. So, I hear people say, New Orleans, that we should get ready for a new normal. And I can honestly say that I'm not prepared for a new normal. I would like to deal with the matters as they are and get back to what I'm accustomed to, what works here. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think that given the fact that the only possible alternative we have is new vaccines being developed, and as we debate with ourselves whether we should take it or not, which I think ultimately most of us will go ahead and capitulate as we see others take it and nothing happens to them, they don't die, and we all. I would suspect around this time next year we'll be back. We'll be back to being around other people.
Yeah, my wife is a health professional, and she insists. Of course, I understand the need for it as well. I do the flu shot every year, and for the first time, well, first couple of years, I've been doing the pneumonia shot. You understand? And you know this. You're a person of history. You know one of the reasons African Americans in particular are skeptical of a lot of vaccines and medicines. Is because of the Tuskegee debacle that still rings in a certain generation's ears, and we don't have enough of us in the health sciences that are actually treating people and conducting research and things of that nature. I'm curious, what do you think about that? Do you think that is something we should encourage or focus on?
Well, you know, I do know that it is said that African Americans are skeptical of a lot of stuff because of Tuskegee, and it was other things. But you know, we gotta be real consistent with that. Many of us still get vaccinated. We still go get flu shots. We get the pneumonia shots. We get our children vaccinated for school. So,
right.
you know, we have to kind of be consistent with whether we want to get shots or not get shots. And there's always a possibility of something can go wrong. What I'm trying to do, I'm trying to rationalize why I might take the vaccine. Because right now I don't see a choice. I don't see a choice if not being vaccinated, the possibility of getting real sick. So that's just you're up against that wall. You either get real sick, and you know people that have gotten sick and died of COVID, or you take a vaccine that the scientific experts, whom we just have to trust across the board, until the experts that say, oh no, wait a minute, this is with these vaccines, we take the flu shot. Okay, so people go to the drugstore, Walgreens and whatnot, take the flu shot, take the pneumonia shot, take shingles, and your children got to get vaccinated, got to have certain vaccinations done for school. So we do this anyway. So if they say these three vaccines that are out are proving to be possibly successful, we're just going to have to trust the word of these particular healthcare professionals at the moment.
Here's what would be helpful. I read an article the other day, yesterday I finished it, in reference to those three and the efficacy that they're purporting right now. I think all of them were over 95% of the success rate with the trials that they did. Now, mind you, it's fast-paced. It's faster than they normally do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with the group that they have, the control group and experimental group, they found the success. It's helpful for people, and I realize that everybody's not wonky like that, perhaps like I am, but it's helpful for people to go and read for themselves what the doctors, not necessarily politicians, Republicans or Democrats, but what the doctors are saying about or the researchers are saying about their efficacy so far. And I think that would help them a lot. You know what I mean? That would help them a great deal, more confidence, because they actually have patients that they have given placebos to as well as the vaccine. And what they're really showing is that it's actually helping prevent death largely in that sample population that they have. So that was very promising to me, man. It sounds promising anyway.
As I said, it's going to get better. What we learn about the vaccines is going to become better as the weeks come by, and then when the new year comes, we'll be better in better shape of making a decision. And I think it's going to come down to which one you want to take and who's going to pay for it and how much it's going to be.
Correct. Now, there you go right there. You have an option. You know what I mean? You have a choice. But one of the things I hear, and I have several family members who work in hospital settings, two sisters, as a matter of fact, currently, and they're happy about is the focus, or the promise at least, that they're going to provide it to healthcare workers first, those essential workers, to keep them, you know, keep them strong on the forefront. But like you said, they're still. I know my sisters are questionable about whether or not they want to trust it. What's the problem?
Yeah, everybody. But I think as we know someone, for example, I understand that I think you may have to take two doses, just take one and go back 21 days later. So one of my sisters said, well, after the person we know go for the second time and he's still alive, then I might go.
That sounds like the king having somebody taste his food right there, man.
but back to the paranoia, we have to understand that the paranoia is justified, but we trust medical healthcare professionals every day when we go to our doctor's appointments, when we take the prescription, and sometimes the prescriptions the doctors give may not be correct or accurate, but we still go through with it until we get sick. And then learn that the medication got to be cut back. So you know, we're going to have to trust these researchers and scientific researchers and medical professionals who put themselves out there and vouch for this stuff. I think Morehouse president, Dillard University president, I think they volunteered for the trials.
Oh, did they? Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, some of the HBCU presidents, I know Xavier University, Dillard University president, and I think Morehouse, because they wanted to do this for the African-American community to show that this would be helpful, you know. And so they volunteered to be part of these trials.
Yeah, that was good leadership right there, man. I was going to say that, I have some prescribed medicines, and I listen to my doctor's position on them and why he prescribed them and so forth. And for the most part, I agree with it, but I did my own research. And I let him know, I'm going to find out what the side effects and things of that nature. And so I'm grateful to say that he and I work as a team. You understand what I'm saying? On what he does for me. And he understands that if I have some questions, I have some doubts about it, because there are a couple of them that, you know, when I went back and read the research on the medicine, it's been out a while now. One of them is a high blood pressure medicine. And I said to him, well, what's a little concerned about me, we didn't have very many African Americans in those. So I'm not sure that we can say categorically that, you know, certain positive results that are reported applies ethnically, you know what I mean? But we have that kind of communication. So I just say that to say that the more people can be involved and aware, and I want to emphasize that I realize everybody don't do that. Everybody don't go and go behind and check and study things like that. But it's kind of what I was talking about
people,
the other night. Go ahead.
No, what you're saying? No, go ahead.
I was going to say that's kind of what I was speaking of the other night when I was talking about having a balance between, you know, your faith. Because I trust God. I haven't got it, but I'm grateful, and I'm grateful for that, right? But even if I do acquire it, we're going to take necessary precautions and follow treatment methodology. But more importantly, I'm trusting God, Neola. You know what I mean? That's where my faith is, and I'd rather not have it if I can't trust him. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that the faith in God would be even more, we should rely on that even more when it comes time to the decision of taking a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
And that's because we're coming to that point now. We're coming to that point now where the vaccines are going to be available, and certain people may be required to take them based off their profession and the fact that they're around a lot of people. And so we're going to be coming to that pressure point, you know, about taking the vaccine. And so eventually, in the beginning, you're going to have people going to get the vaccine. And I guess when we see that, you know, when we're not hearing about too many problems and side effects, then you're going to see more and more people going to go make the decision to get vaccinated, what goes with that is the numbers of cases going down, the number of serious fatalities going down, then we'll probably be provided with numbers to show that, you know, taking the vaccine was helpful. And then everybody's confidence would become better, and then restrictions would probably – I'm just looking at the possible timeline of things that would happen.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, any positive result can only be good and useful, I would think. That's just one man's opinion. But anything that is good is, I mean, I certainly would not reject anything that is good and positive for certain. But I noticed where the Supreme Court, though, intervened and struck down Governor Cuomo's ruling in New York. And basically what it was saying is that there are certain, we've talked about this, certain constitutional rights that even the concern of the virus cannot take precedence over. And I thought that was interesting, because I do think that what that might do is, for a great many of people, is encourage and embolden them to take a stronger stance on, particularly when it comes to religious worship or whatever. And I'm not just talking about Christians either. I'm talking about other faith groups as well.
Yeah, that was Jewish people in New York that filed the lawsuit. Now, of course, a lot of that with the Supreme Court's decision, it boils down to your particular ideological persuasion politically, and the court happens to be majority conservative at this point. But, you know, because you had a big old situation at a synagogue, it was like 7,000 people at some wedding or something like that. And again, you know, whether it's a church or not, it still boils down to the fact that they're strongly recommending people not gather in large numbers indoors like that in particular, because you would, you know, increase the spread of the virus. So therefore, that decision, of course, was obviously understood as an ideological political decision based off the viewpoint of the Supreme Court, which is basically a conservative court, majority conservative.
Yeah, well, but more importantly, though, do you see any part of the fact that constitutionally the First Amendment it says that the state will not enact any, I'm paraphrasing, any law that will abridge those First Amendment rights, you know, freedom of religion and worship, expression and things of that nature. You see what I'm saying?
If you're in warfare, if you're in wartime and the enemy is on your territory, you might have to have curfew. People may have to be in because you're at war. Well, this virus is really an invasion of people's human quality of life. The very physical life is at threat. And so, therefore, because that's what is acknowledged worldwide, that we're in a pandemic, and what this particular pandemic can do and how it spreads, I think, and seeing how it can be temporary if certain things are done, you know, I think there are exceptions always, just like on an airplane. We cannot do anything we want on an airplane. We can't scream and cut up on the airplane because they have a federal police will arrest you when that plane lands somewhere.
But, you know, one thing about different than an airplane is you make a choice to get on there. You make a conscious choice to take the risk to get on there. Unlike on the ground, you know, where you have a right to go and come, and you understand what I'm saying. But I take your point, though, that is a safety issue. And I do hear the element of safety here, you know, in terms of the health.
There are many stories. I know in this area in particular, I just haven't kept up with it around the country, where multiple people in churches have died, including the ministers and their wives.
I'm familiar with what you're talking about. When you mentioned that the other day, I'm familiar with what I've heard of that. Georgia or Mississippi, one of those, that was a very similar case right there. And I didn't know him personally, but I knew one of the pastors that were involved in that. Yeah, so no doubt about it. Now, here's the thing, though, St. Louis. Here's the thing. When they began to look into the cases, if I'm not mistaken, all of those individuals had pre-existing conditions that at very best any effect that COVID had only exacerbated their pre-existing conditions. So many of them were already in an unhealthy position in the first place. Not to minimize now the effect of any disease, though. But, yeah,
we already know that COVID causes or worsens things in the individual. But I find it highly unlikely that 11 people in one church and the pastor and his wife all would have just died anyway within the time span of a month.
I would like to hear more about the further research of that situation. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm very curious. I hadn't heard much else about it, but I'm very curious to know more details about that. Yeah, I'm very curious.
Before everybody went on lockdown, people had already congregated. So a lot of the deaths started at the point, a lot of the grave sickness and death started at the point after the lockdown had started. Then people, I'm telling you about this area where I live, the New Orleans area, people started learning of various people dying, and several of the news stories here with churches, how you would have this one church, is it Shiloh Baptist Church in Marrero, Louisiana? Like 11, 12. Now, the pastor didn't die in that church because I think he got sick, but he didn't die. But he had like 11 members that had died.
Yeah, I see. Yeah,
and then down the street, down the street, the pastor and his wife died on the same day.
Wow. Okay. I was going to say,
but the point is people have to just be patient and people, and I do think a good behavior, I do think a good practice that's going to be coming out of this situation we're in is the emphasis on hygiene, washing hands regularly. And I think the wearing a mask is going to cut down on a lot of colds and stuff like that, too.
Now, that's interesting you say that, because that's one of the things that I said. We had a doctor on early on some months ago that talked about the COVID and its effect and blah, blah, blah. And she was certainly bolstering CDC guidelines and things of that nature. And one of the questions I asked her, I said, well, doc, for a long time, wasn't there an absence of basic health hygiene, washing your hands? I've seen this personally, where you go to a restaurant and you got a smorgasbord. You go in the bathroom and you see a fella in the bathroom. He doesn't hit a lick of water on his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And come right out and got his hands on everything out there. You understand? So basic hygiene. My problem is, in my role and in occupation, I engage people, I hug people, I shake their hand and talk to them. You understand what I'm saying? My wife and daughter often told me they made sure I kept hand sanitizer on me all the time because that's just what I did. And they encouraged me, which made sense. I appreciate what they were saying. You know, their thing is you're more susceptible to catch the flu or cold or some other virus because you interact with so many people and you don't really think about it. And I have a tendency to put my hand in my face. So all those things make sense, man. I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
It's the basic things that I hope it brings us to a certain reality about.
And one of the things this has definitely have altered my I travel a lot, so it has altered my travel plan. So I'm contemplating when I'm going to go back out of the country now. So I haven't right now. My only look right now, I was going to do a trip in the spring, but it could possibly, when the vaccine's available, possibly in the summer or the fall of 2021, I'll be back hitting the airplanes again.
I see. Yeah. You know, my wife and I had just got back from the Bahamas when about a week or two before a lot of the shutdowns, the national shutdowns took place. And it was interesting because people were not cognizant of any real threat or concern. But now it's going to be interesting to see how other countries and places around the world treat their travel. You know, I know in Chicago and in Ohio, they have things where if you come there and you have to quarantine if you can't demonstrate that you're free of the virus and that sort of thing. So a lot of stuff, man, a lot of stuff going on.
Every generation have to live through certain inconveniences, you know, so we're not the only time, you know. Now, Hurricane Katrina affected the Gulf Coast area, didn't affect the whole country outside of the fact it was a news story, but the pandemic is a worldwide thing, so everybody's impacted. And we know that we had the yellow fever in 1918 was a yellow fever. Now, as a child, I heard my grandparents talk about that, and that there were relatives that had died during that period. You know, so I knew of that through talk in the family.
Right. Those oral stories. Yeah. Well, you know, I should write that I have the greatest respect for medical science and the things that God has blessed them to successfully master, right, through the practice and what have you. But common sense does still play a role. And when people, I think one of the biggest problems, I think you heard me say this the other day, is that true enough, on both sides, things have been politicized to where normal average people who were wanting to work and to do what was best for everybody took. I'll give you an example. Sadly, when George Floyd was killed, right, and when the Breonna Taylor incident came up, I understood young people taking to the streets, but that just flew in the face of what CDC and other governors and states were saying about, you know what I'm saying, social distancing and not having large mass gatherings. So, because I hope you can appreciate where some people say, well, doggone. If you can suspend it for that, then I can determine what's essential. You know what I mean? And that's what
I think everybody in America, every group in America is guilty of violating the CDC recommendation. Everybody could be held accountable, brought up on charges, and indicted for violating that. You know, it's just the same when you have people are just used to being able to move as they want to, as they choose to move. But when it comes to an emotional, political expression, such as protests or reaction to something, that's just the challenging nature we have here. You can't keep people contained. You know, and so obviously the protests contributed to a spread as any other large gathering did.
Which was not really dealt with and addressed on a large scale, you know, as it is when people gather for weddings and things of that nature, or even churches. You didn't hear the news media really focus on or even ask questions about how much did this affect the spread, which in many of these larger cities now, Chicago for one in particular, that's the main reason. But you don't hear much reporting on it. But it's a whole other story, man, and people've got to look at what is best for them. They have to look at what is best for them and kind of go from there. So, but, yeah.
Yeah,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm just going to announce. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is an abbreviated show. It's open mic, so whatever you want to talk about, we're happy to do that. Right now, we just got one call on, but I realize people with their family, he done cooked and fed his folks already. They fed and they probably sleep now, ain't they, New Orleans?
Yeah, we have. Well, say people are quiet, and even relatives that call from different places, I call. It seems as though everybody's following. Now, my neighbor next door, apparently her children, because I heard they were outside, a lot of noise, but I think it was just her and her adult children that she sees every day anyway.
I see.
That over there, you know. That's the only noise I heard in the neighborhood.
Well, it's probably everything is different, too. I think there are a great number of people who are kind of distancing themselves. But then there are people who hit the road, man. They want to see their folks. They want to see their people. And I understand that. I fully understand that. So there you go. 657-383-0944. It's number to call if you want to join us here. Facebook, feel free to post questions, comment there. And I'll respond to some of those after the show, after the live stream is over here. But
let me say this. Every time there was a projected time, there would be a surge. The surge is happening. I guess we can go back to April when the experts were saying, well, if this happens, then we'll see a surge at this point. And so we have been seeing the surges every time they say it. And the areas where they had stringent protocols, like New Orleans, area, Louisiana, we were very strict here. So when surges did happen, it didn't happen at the same pace it did in other parts of the country. Now, here, we're beginning to see an uptick in daily cases. And the mayor has done a great job. The governor has done an excellent job. In fact, the governor has just recently, as of Tuesday, the governor put the state of Louisiana back in modified phase 2. showing how they're concerned about the uptick in cases. And a big indicator of how serious this is what's going on in the hospitals.
Yeah.
See, that's the real indicator that this is serious. When the healthcare professionals and the managers of these hospitals is reporting that so many people are coming into the emergency room with these symptoms and cases, and the beds are being filled, you know, so those are the indicators.
Now, so here's the thing. When I hear surge, I ask the question, what is it exactly that's surging? Because when I read what is posted in black and white in terms of preliminary reports since we began to monitor things, it seems to mean that the greater concern of people that are dying and people that have been hospitalized are not as high as they were, but you are seeing a significant increase of people that are being tested, that are being identified as positive or non-symptomatic, but having evidence of having had it at least, or some immunity, and that sort of, that's rising. And when you are encouraging people, they're still doing it here in Nashville, to go and get tested. What they found is, New Orleans, is that under certain conditions, such as if your employer tells you, you can't come back to work until you have a negative test. People have found themselves being tested 2 and 3 times within a month's time. That adds to the number, and it seems to be an unrealistic number of actually new people, new cases, if that makes any sense. But they all been added in together, though, as new cases, which, again, when you do a deep dive in the data, you have to ask yourself, okay, what are we really looking at?
Let me see this. Before the pandemic, and many of us take this for granted. Before the pandemic, and even while they have a pandemic, every city, county, or what have you, and state have what you call health departments.
Right.
Now, the people that man these health departments are trained public health officials. Many of them are physicians. And or they have graduate degrees in public health. So when we look at stuff like tuberculosis, we look at sexually transmitted diseases, they're tracking these things in our communities every day. We just take it for granted and don't necessarily result to looking at what the numbers are. So there's a science in healthcare and in public health on when you have a given population and you have an outbreak, how long it would take for that outbreak to spread given the mobility of the people. And they have whole algorithms, just like insurance. They have a whole algorithm to project it. The science is fascinating with the technology added. And when I saw a 60 Minutes story back in April, they had projected this spread going back to like maybe in December or November. They have projected this to happen once it had been known in Wuhan, China, that the virus was there because people travel. You have international flights, and these flights leave. So they have all of that packed down. So it's just like insurance. They know the numbers are done based on scientific algorithms and computer models.
I got you. Predictive models, yes, absolutely. The only thing about that, though, is that the models that they're using and the data is only as good as it, how new it is and how updated it is, because people change. And that's the thing about the social sciences. You know this, that people's behavior change under given conditions and circumstances. And the numbers that you had on a data set for a certain population was good in that time, but it may not necessarily be accurate in the present moment in real time because, again, of the ever-changing nature of human beings.
That's a good point. So, for example, let's say you get an announcement, 10 people tested positive today. Well,
right.
By tomorrow night around this time, that number is going to be higher.
It could
so
be.
The numbers you get at a given time are going to be lower than what they'll be when they're given again the next time.
Or if
because people are coming into contact, people who were tested had come into contact with people who haven't tested yet.
That's true, too. Or we can use that example of a real case where several people have been tested multiple times within a certain time period that's being reported, which gives a skewed number, which is inaccurate in terms of brand new people or new cases, because that's really multiple cases from the same person or persons, if you will. And that just speaks to the human behavior, the human side of it, because people want to go back to work. And when jobs are saying that you can't come back unless you've been out for 2 weeks, 14 days, or and then you have to bring back evidence, like a sick note, that you tested negative, you know, that puts an undue pressure on things because people got to live. They got. I know I was looking at a story here where, I mean, they shouldn't be doing it. I think that's wrong, but a certain part of Nashville, people are being evicted, man. They've been forced to move out of their houses. And I'm like, wait a minute, I thought we had a federal thing that prevented that. I'm confused about it, but I'm just saying those are some of the stressors that lead people to do things that perhaps are not.
Because
well
those people
out.
That own the properties, the people that own those properties, unfortunately, they got to pay bills, you see.
Well,
and if they don't
right.
pay bills, they may be under pressure to lose what they have. I'm not defending nobody. It's the ripple effect of these things.
No, you are absolutely right, sir. You're absolutely right. Those people that own the properties rely on their tenants who perhaps lost their jobs to pay their rent in a timely fashion. You understand what I'm saying? But it is a domino effect. Absolutely, it's a domino effect.
I have some rental property, and my tenants, they've been able to, you know, meet their rent demands. Fortunately, on my part, I haven't had to come across a situation like a person not paying me rent, and I have to consider whether or not they have to be evicted and all of that. You know.
Right. Well, I tell you, I have some parishioners. Were challenged, and I encouraged them, if you have anything, take care of your bill. Prioritize what's important, you know what I mean? Take care of your bills, and if you have to cut back on something else, then we'll look at how we can help you, or you know what I mean? But make sure you take care of what's important. You got to have a place to stay, you know, your family and what have you. But that's where it is. That's where it is.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, hopefully we'll be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, but they do expect between now and Christmas time for it to get pretty bad because of the fact of people getting into contact with each other from this weekend moving forward. Now, again, having monitored this since we were put in the shutdown in March, I have to say that everything that these CDC people say it would happen has been happening. And in my state, in particular Louisiana, where they had implemented shutdown or restrictions based off different phases, that when we moved to a new phase, it was because numbers had gone down. You know, they had numbered down. But again, and I would say this was an excellent state, that this was a state that implemented excellent protocols to address the spread of the virus. But now we're in a position where numbers are inching back up, and the governors had to move us back into what is called a phase two. You know, so if this state is facing a situation where there are upticks in cases and hospitalization, then God help other parts of the country.
I think Florida was hit with that. Atlanta was, Georgia was hit with that to some degree, and even Alabama was hit with it. And you know, I guess that's what we said. Really, each state is an experiment in democracy because each of them are autonomous in their own right, and you know, depending on where they're coming from or what they're view of things is where they come down on it. So, but at the end, we're all American citizens, man. We all live here, and I like to see everybody get along and be in peace with one another. That's what I would like. A lot of friction out there, but I like to see everybody, you know, get
everything been boiled down to. Everything been boiled down. If you do this, you're on that side. If you do this, you're on that side.
That's what I hate. That's what I really dislike. But I don't know what I can as a person do about it. But I pray that that changes sooner than later. And people are able to be sociable and amicable with one another and things of that nature. So
I think people have to have a respect for information. And information could be acquired by many different ways, you know. And I think people have developed a sort of aversion to information, which includes science. Now, the people that live in rural communities of Appalachia and that whole area, I've had chances to travel through those places, and those people are very suspicious of strangers. And there's this association with them of being hostile to learned people, to educated people. They have this. And so many politicians have tried to portray themselves. Let me give you an example. George Bush, the son, you know, they were from Texas. They were not from Texas originally. They're from the East Coast, Connecticut. So his father, you know, his father was the Ivy League guy. He carried himself as the Ivy League guy. But the son kind of, and he also was an Ivy League person too. But what he did was he played this role that he was pretty much like a hillbilly type. You know what I'm saying? You know, live in a little rent-style house. And all of that stuff is an appeal to a certain type of people.
New Orleans, we got another statement, and we'll bring our call in from San Antonio, Texas. Go ahead, finish your statement. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, so what I wanted to say was, we just have to, we have to return back to a respect for information. I remember as a child, see, when I was a kid, I was born in 58. So when I was a child, there were people who were old. They were very old. And my grandmother would say that when somebody was able to read a newspaper, everybody would gather around and hear the newspaper read, you know?
Okay.
Because they wanted to know what was going on. We have to return back to respect for information.
I appreciate that. I think that makes sense. We got just a few more minutes in this abbreviated broadcast, but let me welcome the caller from Texas there, 210-2506. Welcome. This is Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. We've got a good friend out of here from New Orleans on with us tonight. Question or comment? Our topic is Let's Give Thanks. Anything you want to express thanks or appreciation for? Or some other
thing? Yeah, can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Yeah, I just want to be thankful for someone special that came into my life, and I just want to make sure that she can hear how thankful I am that she came to my life and completely changed my aspect of you and everything.
Interesting.
And,
okay.
I definitely wanted her to know that I care for her, and I'm always going to be there for her.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
We need to cherish the people around us. And
I want to be thankful for your mama's pussy.
Okay. All righty. Bless your heart. You should be thankful for your mama because she brought you here. You definitely should be thankful for your mama because she brought you here. So that's the nature of open talk show. We welcome everybody to call, but anyway, he got it in, and we heard him, and so bless his heart. I hope he can hear me now. I wish you well, and brother, I hope you can get yourself together in such a way that
people bored, don't know what to do. That's the downside of having to be locked in.
I get it. I get it. So, but yeah, we'll go ahead and wrap it up with that, New Orleans, because we again, this is an abbreviated show, and I promised my wife that I was going to keep it short, so I can go ahead and I guess if she just want to look at me and make sure I'm looking right, she can do that too. But great conversation. I appreciate what we were just reiterating. The importance of information, that's one thing that took away from what you're saying, valuing information and really being able to critique it, right, and take from it what is important and what's essential. So, final word on that before we wrap up for tonight.
Yeah, I just want to say, yeah, I think that people need to, I think in this digital age where everybody is getting a lot of the information from Twitter or YouTube or whatever, it has cut down on reading hard copy newspapers and books. And, you know, when people who are in the habit of reading hard copy papers and books, they have a better appreciation, in my opinion, for information and have an ability to, you know, be a fair judge and critic of that information as opposed to just sitting down watching a news story already composed for you with a slanted edge, you see. And so I think that we have to try to respect information and seek information and try to learn more and more, you know. And it, like this quote that this prophet Muhammad said, he who wakes up in the morning and seeks knowledge walks in the path of God. And that's not being a Muslim myself, but just looking at the power and the wisdom of those words. We have to have a respect for information. I think that that's where we have lost in this time, is people are being spoon-fed certain stories with a twist, with an agenda there. And so, you know.
There are a lot of, as you were saying, hardcore publications that are going out of business because of digital advances, have you? And I agree with you. I'd much rather sit and read the newspaper than to go online.
Right. So, well, okay, Reb, I appreciate that and enjoy the rest of the evening.
Yes, sir, you do the same. Thanks for joining us tonight. And with that, we're going to wrap up for tonight, and thank you all for joining us. Feel free to leave your question or comments there in the Facebook group there, and we'll respond accordingly. Until next Tuesday, we look forward to seeing you on behalf of Talk Straight. We'll think well of you then.